I don't know if you remember Wayne and Linda Holly from Louisiana. When they first came here, they spoke a foreign language that my father taught me, Southern. Okay? And I had long forgotten it. So I introduced myself to Linda, and she introduced me. And then she said, "This is my husband, Wine." Wine. I just could not figure that out. So I thought his name really was Wine. And so when I got home, Cynthia said, no, that's Wayne. Okay, Wayne, okay. Well, that introduces something I'd like to say here. There's a story told of a family that moved from Pennsylvania to Mississippi. Their four-year-old son came home from church one Sunday and all excited about the Sunday school lesson. He said, "My teacher taught us all about the whales," he announced. And his mother said, "You mean Jonah and the whale?" Now, if I was a Southern kid back when I used to be, I would have said something like, because she was wrong about Jonah and the whales. I would have said something like this: "He ain't done it. He ain't done it. Jonah weren't swallowed by no whale. He was swallowed by a fish." Yeah, that's what I would have said, okay? But anyway, no, and her son said, "No, it was Jacob and the whales." And then, I think it was Jonah, his mother corrected. "He was swallowed by a whale in the ocean." But her son knew his lesson, and he said, "No, Jacob, it was Jacob. He moved into the desert, and when he got thirsty, he dug some whales." Okay. Is that all you know about Jacob? Okay. In Genesis 22, we have these verses beginning in verse 19. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son, and Abraham begat Isaac. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian, of Padam Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated by him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And when she went to inquire of the Lord said unto her, "Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be born unto thee. Of thee, and the one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger." A minister one day sat in the vestry of his church to meet anyone who might have spiritual difficulties. Only one came. "What is your difficulty?" asked the minister. The man answered, "My difficulty is the 9th chapter of Romans, where it says, 'Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated.'" "Yes," said the minister, "there is great difficulty in that verse. But which part of the verse is difficult to you?" "The latter part, of course," said the man. "I cannot understand why God should hate Esau." The minister replied, "That verse has often been difficult, but my difficulty has always been with the first part of the verse. I could never understand how God could love that wily, deceitful, supplanting scoundrel, Jacob." And we're going to take a brief survey of Jacob's life this morning. And the thought I'd like to emphasize as we go through his life is this: learn from the life of Jacob. Let's pray. Father, we're grateful for your word. That's where we turn. We understand it has propositions for us, it has precepts, it has teaching. And all of these your spirit can use to convict us, to comfort us, to change us. And I pray, Lord, that our hearts would be open to your word, and that we would hear the voice of your spirit speaking to us, and that we would learn from it as we look at the life of your servant, Jacob. In your son's name we ask. Amen. Okay? So first of all, Jacob's home and family. Jacob, as we just read in our passage, was the son of Abraham and Rebekah. Now you remember, Isaac was the son of promise that God had given to Abraham. In fact, it was miraculous. Abraham was approximately 99 years old, and that's not beyond concept for a 99-year-old to have a son. But Rebekah was around 90, so that's a little bit hard to accept sometimes. But it was miraculous. Okay, so he was the miraculous son. And when he was grown, his father refused to take a wife from among the heathen in the land in which they were living. And so Abraham instructed his servant to go and get a bride for his son from among his kinfolk back at a place called Haran. They'll come back. We'll see that in a moment. I mean, that city in a moment. The servant, he was guided by God. Remember, he prayed such and such about, you know, about a young girl coming, you know, whoever comes, and, you know, he'll follow her, and that's the one he's chosen. And so that happened. And he brought back Rebekah to be the bride of Isaac. And then in the passage we just read, we see from their story that they were expecting their first child. Now it turns out that she didn't have one child, but she's going to have two sons, and so she would have twins, and she was going to have some struggles in that. And so we see that again now that Jacob was in the family of Isaac and Rebekah. Now, his brother's name was Esau. He was the man of the flesh. He was outwardly far more attractive than Jacob. He was kind of like an outdoors man, he would be the athletic type. You know, he would be the Heisman Trophy winner. He was the popular man. He was the extrovert. He was the man of the world. That was Esau. And then there was Jacob. Now, you may not think this, but as you look at all of Jacob's life and you get towards the end of his life, you would understand that Jacob was the man of the Spirit. And God is going to use him in a special way. Now, that wasn't apparent at the beginning of his life. When you first meet him, he's actually much, much less attractive than Esau. But Jacob was clever. He was self-opinionated. He was crooked as can be. But all above all, he was a mama's boy. Yeah. And so, one of the things we see in their family, look at verse 28 in our text. Verse 28. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. What do you call that? Favoritism. And anytime you allow favoritism to enter your family, you open the door to a lot of problems. And they had them, did they not? And so in this family, both parents had their favorites. And they had a lot of friction. Now, as the boys grow up, we notice that they are not identical twins. They are almost opposite in so many different things in their physical characteristics. And God said that before they were born, and so it would be. Remember what he said in our text? I have chosen the older to serve the younger. Now, don't you think Rebekah told that to Jacob as he was growing up? She said, you know, she may say, you know, Esau, he's got all the things coming his way, but guess what? He is going to serve you one day. You can count on it because God said so. And so Jacob, knowing God's promise, connived to get the right of the firstborn. And so we go to chapter 26, look at verse 29. Verse 29. Let's start with verse 27. I have a typo in my notes here. And the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. And again, we read the passage here, but verse 28, verse 29. And Jacob boiled pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage. For I am faint, therefore his name was called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. Now remember, God had promised him this. And what should have Jacob done? He should have waited. But it wasn't happening, so he chose to work it out for his own benefit. Sell me this day thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am appointed to die. What profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he swore to him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Now it says in the passage here that Jacob was making soup. It was lentil soup. It says he sawed pottage. That's lentil soup. The Hebrew word translated sawed means to cook. In some context, the word also has the idea of to defy, to be arrogant. But there is another word meaning for this word. It means to scheme. You see, this was no accident. Jacob knew Esau's condition and that, you know, he hadn't been doing very well in hunting, so he was going to be very hungry. So he intentionally schemed to make this lentil soup so that he could get things his way. So when Esau came hungry, he traded the soup. Jacob traded his soup for Esau's birthright. Now, why is the birthright so important? Well, someone wrote, having the birthright actually meant that the boy possessing it would be the priest of the family. And it guaranteed that the promises made to the father would be confirmed to him. Another writer. Esau came in from hunting hungry, but not starving to death. Jacob did not take advantage of a starving man. Do you think anyone could have starved to death in the wealthy home of Abraham or Isaac? Of course not. But when he smelled the aroma of his brother's cooking, he wanted it. Now, you got nothing from Jacob unless you paid for it. And Jacob bargained. I'll let you have it if you will let me have that birthright you don't care about. Esau so despised his birthright that he said, you may have it. It means nothing to me. Thus Jacob buys that which God had already promised to give him. He wanted to get it on his own. God could not, nor did he, approve of this transaction. Okay? Nor could he approve of this transaction. Now, so Jacob doesn't stop there. Notice chapter 27 now, beginning in verse 1. And it came to pass, when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see, he called Esau, the eldest, and said unto him, my son. And he said unto him, behold, here am I. And he said, behold, I am old, and I not know the day of my death. In fact, he lives several years after this, so he was being kind of anticipatory here. And now, therefore, take, I pray thee, thy weapons and thy quiver and thy bow, and go out into the field and take me some venison. And make me savory food as I love, such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. And Rebekah heard when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt for venison. So Isaac decides it's time to give Esau the blessing. And the thing about it is this. Isaac also heard the words of God that promised Jacob the preeminence. What's Isaac doing here by saying, I'm going to give Esau the blessing? He is disobeying God. Because he should, instead of blessing Esau, he should have done what God had told him was going to happen, and he should have blessed Jacob, gave him the blessing. So he ignored the words of God to Rebekah. But one writer says, Isaac was still intent on treating Esau as the eldest and granting him the blessing of birthright, and so arranged for his favorite meal before bestowing the final fatherly blessing on his favorite son. But what happens? Well, it says in verse 5, Rebekah heard. Notice verse 6, and Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau, thy brother, saying, Bring me venison, and make me savory food, that I may eat, and bless thee before the Lord, before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, according to that which I command thee. Go now to the flock, and fetch me from there two good kids of the goats, and I will make them savory food for thy father, such as he loveth. And so what does Rebecca do? She collaborates with her son to have a deception. Let's read on. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, and he may eat, that he may bless thee before his death. And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, Behold, Esau my brother is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father perhaps will feel me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me, and not a blessing. By the way, if he does this, what is he? He's not as a deceiver. He is a deceiver, right? And his mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse. That's going to come back on her, by the way, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch me them. And he went and fetched them and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory food such as his father loved. And Rebekah took the choicest raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And he put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands, upon the smooth of his neck, and she gave the savory food and the bread which he had prepared, and unto the hand of her son Jacob. Verse 18, and he came unto his father and said, My father, and he said, Here I am, who art thou, my son? And Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou hast badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat my venison, that thy soul may bless me. And so he's there. He's deceiving his father. Now, Isaac is not quite fooled by what Jacob's doing. He senses something's going wrong. So notice verse 27. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment and blessed him and said, See, the smell of my son is at the smell of the field, which the Lord hath blessed. That means his clothes hadn't been washed in a while. And therefore God gave thee of the dew of the heaven and the fatness of the earth and the plenty grain and wine, that people serve thee and the nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's son bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. And so his eyes are dimmed, but he was taken in by this ruse, this clever ruse of Rebekah and Jacob. And this blessing, this theft of the blessing, was the straw that broke the camel's back. It really turned Jacob's brother against him. Notice verse 41. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father at hand, then will I slay my brother Jacob. He says, My father's old. I don't want to do anything that would put him in an early grave, but the minute he dies, Jacob is dead too. That was in his heart. Now, Rebekah heard about this. Notice verse 43. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice after and arise, for and flee thou to the house of my brother to Haran. See, here's Haran again. Tarry with him for a few days until thy brother's fury turn away. Until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch thee from there. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? So, she tells Jacob to go to Haran for a few days. But you know how long the few days turned out to be? About 20 years before he returned home. By that time, she was dead. So when she sent Jacob away, she never saw him again. And so Jacob leaves. And what happens is that he goes and he departs, and he comes to a place called Bethel. He calls it Bethel. Notice verses 10 through 15 of the next chapter, chapter 28. And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went towards Haran. And he came to a certain place and tarried there all night because the sun was set, and he took of the stones of the place and put them for his pillows and lay on them in that place to sleep. I don't know about you, but I'd have a hard time putting my head on a stone and sleeping, but he was able to do that. He must have been really tired. Okay? And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up from on the earth. And the top of it reached to heaven. Behold, the angels of God ascending and descending upon it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, the God of Isaac. The land whereupon thou liest, to thee will I give it, to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee shall, and thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all the places to which thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken thee of. Now, think of Jacob. He is a conniver, a schemer, a liar, and a deceiver. And we see God here blessing him. Did Jacob deserve any of that? No. We're looking at the mercy of God. The mercy of God, and the faithfulness of God. Because, see, God wasn't blessing Jacob because of Jacob. He was blessing Jacob because of his promise to Abraham about his seed will be as the stars of the heaven. So he leaves home, and he spends this night in Bethel. And he dreams of a ladder set up on earth with angels on it. It says the angels were ascending and descending upon the ladder. What does that mean? God is telling Jacob that he will answer prayer. The ascending angel, the prayer, is the prayer. The descending angel is the answer. And so you find that that's one of the figures that are talking, that this could mean. Now, notice Jacob's response in verse 16. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. He says, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of God. To heaven. It wasn't a stairway to heaven. It was a ladder to heaven. And he called the place Bethel. And Bethel means the house of God. And he makes a vow. Notice verse 20. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house, and all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. So he makes his vow. And then he goes to Haran. Notice verse 1 of chapter 29. Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of the well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. And there were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, from where are ye? And they said, of Haran are we. So they tell him that they're from Haran. And so he goes to Haran with them, and he meets this girl. She comes to the well. Okay, know you, and they say unto him, verse 5, know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And he said unto them, is he well? And they said, he is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep. And he said, lo, yet it is high day, and neither time for cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them. And they said, we cannot until the flocks be gathered together, till they roll the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. And while they yet spoke, Rachel came with her father's sheep, and she kept them. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, the sheep of Laban and his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban and his mother's brother. See, when Jacob saw Rachel, it was love at first sight. Okay. He's in love with Rachel. And so he goes and he meets her brother. His name is Laban. And he is a worse schemer and deceiver than Jacob. And Laban is going to teach Jacob his comeuppings, okay? And that's what's going to happen. And so he moves in with them. And, you know, it says he saw her sheep. So he thought, okay, they're pretty well off. And so, you know, and so he goes to them. And Laban says, Rebekah's son's here. And Laban thinks back. I remember when the other guy came here. He came here with all those camels, with all those riches. Jacob is the same way. But he didn't know that when Jacob came to him, he was dirt poor. He didn't have anything. So, verse 15, and Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what are thy wages be? And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than I should give her to another. Abide with me. And if you were there, you could hear the gears grinding in Laban's mind because he knew what he was going to do. Okay? And so Jacob said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And so he serves her Laban for 7 years. And he comes to claim his beautiful bride, Rachel. And an evening wedding is arranged. And the bride comes out heavily veiled. The wedding night passes. And then in the light of day of the next morning, Jacob sees his bride, Leah. He has been what? Deceived, right? The deceiver has been deceived. One writer says, Jacob had deceived his father. He has stolen the blessing of the firstborn. Now he has been deceived because of the right of the firstborn. He is learning the truth of the old saying, chickens come home to roost. They always do. And you will find that God puts it in different language later on. In Galatians 6:7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Can you think of another instance in Jacob's life in which Galatians 6:7 was demonstrated? A little bit later on, Jacob's an older man. He has his 11 sons. And they decide to get rid of Joseph. Remember that? And they sell him into slavery, but they bring Joseph's clothing to Jacob, all bloodied and cut up, and said, Joseph is dead. And Jacob believed it for year upon year upon year. Again, he was deceived for his deception. And so after Jacob had been tricked into marrying Leah, he says, okay, and Laban gives him another proposition. Serve me another 7 years for Rachel. Okay, and you can have her. And so he agrees to that. But, you know, he didn't wait another 7 years. He gave him Rachel right away. And so he served that year. And after dealing with Laban and all the problems he had with Laban for 20 years, it's time to go. It's time to go home. Chapter 32, verse 1. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's host, and called the name of that place Mahan Naim. One writer says, God prepared Jacob for meeting Esau by giving the patriarch a vision of angels. Jacob had just left Laban and was about to return to the land and face Esau again. And so Jacob sends messengers to Esau, beginning in verse 3. Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, thus shall you speak to my brother Esau. Remember now, last time Jacob was with Esau, what was the message? Esau's going to kill him. Okay, so he doesn't know that after 20 years what's changed or not. He may still think, well, Esau could still hate me. And when I meet him after 20 years, he is going to kill me. So, thou shalt speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob saith, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants. I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight. So he tells them that. And the messengers return to Jacob, saying, we have come to thy brother Esau, and he also cometh to meet thee with 400 men with him. Now, if you were in Jacob's sandals, what would you be thinking? Here's my brother. He's racing back towards me with 400 men. He's thinking, we're dead meat. In fact, verse 7, then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Okay? And so, in his distress, though, notice what he does. Verses 9 and verse 10. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who saidest unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast shown unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over the Jordan, and now I return in two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother and from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come to smite me and the mother with the children. And so Jacob is saying, oh, Lord, I've been so deceptive all my life. I've always gotten my way by my wits. I can't do it now. I need your help. He appeals to God. And then notice what happens later on in the chapter, beginning in verse 24. And Jacob was left alone. And there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of day. And when he saw he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint, and he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said to Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be no more called Jacob, but Israel. For a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and thou hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it thou dost ask me thy name? And he blessed him. And so Jacob wrestles with this man. And God changes his name. One writer says this. Unto the year 1100, most people in Europe only had one name. But with an increase in the population, surnames were added so people could be more easily identified. These came from four primary sources: an occupation such as cook or miller, a location such as Overhill or Brook, and an answer such as Johnson, so that's Johnson, and with personal characteristics such as small, short, or Longfellow. When God wanted to name an entire people, his chosen nation, he looked past occupations, locations, and ancestors to base his new name on the character of one man, Jacob. Isn't that interesting? The deceiver. One day, in an incredible wrestling match, met with God himself, Jacob insisted that the Lord bless him before departing. So God changed his name from Jacob, which means trickster, to Israel, which means he fights or prevails with God. And so from trickster, he became God's fighter. God had to cripple Jacob in order to get him. Did you notice that? He touched him and he was crippled. And Jacob bowed. He touches the hollow of his thigh. Just a touch of the finger of God, and this man becomes helpless, and he becomes God's man. Notice I've skipped some of my outline here. Let's go to this one. And Jacob returns to Bethel, chapter 35. Notice verse 1 of chapter 35. And God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God, and who appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother." And Jacob said unto his household, and to all that were with him, "Put away the foreign gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments. Let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, who was with me in the way which I went." And they gave unto Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears. And Jacob hid them under an oak which was at Shechem. And they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. So he returns back to Bethel. Jacob tells his people to be clean. Then he says, change your garments. In the Old Testament, change your garments has the idea of change your habits. Isn't that what they call, like, if you're dressed up for riding a horse, what they call it? Riding habits? Okay. Well, change your habits. Jacob is God's man. He's going to need to change his garments, his habits, and start living differently. And from the day he went back to Bethel, it seems like he started living for God. One writer says, God had said, I'll be faithful to you. But Jacob had gone his way, not depending on God's faithfulness, but his own ability. He fell on his face. Disappointment and tragedy came to him. Yet through it all, God was with him, and God blessed him. Now he says, go back to Bethel. You have to go back where you started, Jacob. You have to go back. What are some lessons? First one is this. The ends do not justify the means. You've heard me mention this several times over the last year or so, because we live in a very pragmatic society in which we say the ends do justify the means. I have a good end, my happiness, so I will abort this baby. The ends do not justify the means. God had promised Jacob that he would rule over Esau, did he not? And Jacob understood that, and he accepted that. But instead of waiting upon God, instead of trusting his God, he took matters into his own hands. He stole the birthright with the lentil soup, and then he schemed and lied and deceived to get the blessing of the firstborn. The end was good. I mean, having the birthright and having the having the place, the blessing of the firstborn, they were really great things to have, good things to have. The end was good, but the ways he used to achieve them were wicked, and it did not please God. And so God made sure, as I mentioned earlier, that Jacob got his comeuppance. He made sure that the chickens came home to roost. Jacob reaped what he sowed with Rachel and Leah and with the deception of Joseph's death. And he paid the price. And you and I need to understand that when we become pragmatic, when we use the ends to justify our wicked ways to get to the end, God is not pleased. And he will make sure that we reap what we sow. The second lesson is this. If you won't bow before God, he will break you. Look at Jacob. Proud, lying, deceiving. He wrestled with God until God broke him. That fateful night. And God simply touched him and broke his will. Let me ask you, What will it take for God to break you? Are you ready to pay the price? Would it not just be simpler to bow the knee today before God? A third lesson, the final lesson is this. As Jacob went back to Bethel, you and I need to go back to our Bethel, the cross. Failure, we need to understand, is this. Because Jacob failed through all his life, did he not? I mean, he may have got what he wanted, but he was still failing. Failure is not final. Listen to this. The Apostle Paul failed. Peter failed. Every one of the 12 apostles failed. David, Israel's greatest king, a man after God's own heart, failed. Moses, giant among the Israelites, giver of the law, deliverer of his people, failed. Jacob, father of Israel, failed. Isaac, son of the promise, failed. Abraham, progenitor of Israel, father of the faithful, prototype of those who are righteous, through faith, failed. Even our first parents in their human perfection failed. Who has not failed? It's not failing that is the problem. It is what one does after he fails. And after Jacob failed, he went back to Bethel. And when you and I fail, we need to go back to our Bethel, the cross. The cross. Was it not at the cross you saw and felt the love and compassion of Jesus Christ? Was it not at the cross your heart was broken over your sins? Was it not at the cross where you trusted Jesus Christ as your Savior and your Christian life began? Was it not at the cross you were adopted into the family of God? If you've wandered away from God, if you have failed your God, is not now the time you need to return to your Bethel? Please stand with me. In your hymnals, please, as we close. I was thinking this morning, I was praying before God here in the sanctuary, that and I was thinking of the message, and I said, you know, Lord,